But the room's kind of full, and I tend to speak long, and I did just walk straight into the light, like I said I was going to. So, hi everyone. I'm Ben Armstrong, Program Manager on the Windows Base team. Welcome to Microsoft Ignite. Really excited to be back here. I hope you all enjoyed the keynote. Today I'm here to talk about NanoServer. And before I get in, I always like to ask some questions. The first obvious one is, how many people here have tried out NanoServer themselves? Okay, so I'd say about half the people in the room. I'm going to be covering some basics for the people who haven't tried it out. I'll try and make it interesting for those of you who have tried it out as well. I will say, I'm actually really looking forward to doing this session today because we launched Windows Server 2016 last year, went out last year, went around talking about NanoServer. And actually, in the last couple of months, I've had the chance to go out and work hands-on with some customers and hands-on with some deployments and trying things out in production with NanoServer and seeing what does and doesn't work. So I'm hoping I can share some first-hand experience on that along the way. So with all that, let's jump in. I will say, just a disclaimer, I'm doing four presentations this week. This is my least favorite deck. For some reason, the flow always trips me up. So I guarantee at some stage, I am going to click to a slide and do a double take where I'm like, wait, we're talking about, I'd forgotten about that. So I do apologize if you see me act confused on a slide. It's just because I was expecting a different slide when I hit next. Real professional here. This is the lesson I've learned. I'm being laughed at by the front row. Lesson that I've learned is that you can get away with a lot as long as you set expectations low to start with. So just setting them appropriately. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start by talking about what was some of the motivation behind NanoServer, why we've been working on it. Then I'm going to switch over to the more practical side of how do you use it, what does it look like, what are some of the caveats. And then I'm going to switch back to, okay, what are kind of the future directions and where are we taking NanoServer as a platform. So let's start with why did we build NanoServer? And there are a number of factors that came together. One of the things that I like to spend time to highlight to people is that most times when I go out and meet with customers and they tell me about what they want, I'm going to try and say this politely, but it's hard to say politely. Everyone thinks that they're the center of the world. But one of the things I like to point out is, one of the great things about working on Windows Server is we have so many customers with so many diverse needs. And it's great when we can do something like NanoServer that is able to address needs of a lot of different customer segments. So what are some of the things that we've heard? Reboots impact my business. That's a fairly obvious one. Here's a fun show of hands. How many people here have had their business negatively impacted by an unexpected need to reboot a server to take an update? Shocking. I know, I've had this effect myself just with my own personal labs, and I hear from customers who are affected by this all the time. Server images are too big. This one's actually a really interesting one because there are a lot of customers that I talk to who go, I don't care about the size of NanoServer because, the smallest hard drive I have in a server is a 40 gig hard drive. So as long as the OS fits on 40 gig, that's fine. The really interesting thing is we do have a number of customers, including a certain large customer called Azure, where their standard operating procedure is to say, we don't store the OS permanently locally. Instead, we push it down over the network, we pixie boot, we deploy it over the network. And the size of the server image starts becoming critical once you're in that deployment model. Now, I actually know we have a number of large hosting customers who are diskless on their servers, and they pixie boot and pull the image down over the network. For those customers, the size of the server image is really crucial to the way they do business. Infrastructure requires too many resources. You know, everyone's trying to get the most out of the hardware that they have. And kind of the biggest one, really, is security. I'm going to be talking about this in two of my sessions today, in this one and in the Hyper-V session that I'm doing later on. But something that I do like to take the time to point out at these events is whenever you hear people talking about computer security and cyber threats and so on, if you're like me, there's very much a tendency to be like, oh yeah, you're just pining for the good old days. Nothing's really changed here. That is not true. There's lots of data, there's lots of evidence that shows that the internet and online is a more hostile place than ever. We are seeing a steady increase in both the frequency of attacks and in the sophistication of attacks. And some of the stuff that we see out there is amazing. The frequency with which unprotected system gets hacked and the time to which they get hacked is just amazing. So security is a huge impact. So when we kind of listen to all of this, the big message that we took away was, okay, we need to start thinking about how do we build a Windows server that is just what you need, like just the components that you need. This has been something that we've been thinking about for a while. A long time ago, we started with the original Windows Server, which was largely, let's take Windows Desktop and figure out how to add things on it to make it servery. That is the reality. I mean, there are, distinguished engineers at Microsoft who don't like it when I say that, but nonetheless, we're all adults. We can acknowledge that that's what happened. And then in Windows Server 2008, we really started working on this concept, and this is when we came out with Windows Server Core. And Windows Server Core was a huge engineering effort because the whole goal of Windows Server Core was, okay, can we take Windows and remove the shell and remove all the graphical components? And let me tell you, I was on the engineering team while we were working on that, and that was a nightmare. It was amazing. We had hundreds of engineers trying to figure out dependencies of different components on other components. When we first tried to do Server Core, the whole system just didn't boot. And it took months of work to figure out, okay, how can we make this work? So that was Windows Server 2008. In Windows Server 2012, we were able to take our next step forward, which wasn't as obvious to our end users, but it was really a big engineering achievement for the team. And that was, when you got Windows Server 2008 or 2008 R2, we used to build Windows Server Core and Windows Full as two separate build processes. With Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, Windows Server Full is actually Windows Server Core with the GUI enabled. And we have this fully layered build. And this is actually a really good engineering thing that we did a lot of work to do. So where did we go from here? Where we went was we started looking at, okay, what do we actually need from a server? And one of the really interesting things that we saw when looking at our customers externally with cloud and internally with Azure is that we needed to rethink the way that we thought about server. And the key rethinking is up until Windows Server 2016, the way we thought about Windows Server was you're going to install this general purpose operating system, and you're going to have the ability to add and remove roles and change it and customize it interactively as you go along. And like, guess what, people? When was the last time you got up and said, huh, you know my private cloud that's running Hyper-V and clustering, I think I want to enable IIS on those boxes. You don't. Certainly Azure doesn't. And what the reality is of today is that for most server deployments, before you even start installing the OS, you know exactly what components you want, and you know exactly what components and what role that server is going to have for its entire lifetime. And there isn't a world where you deploy a server, it's in production for 6 months, and after 6 months you're like, oh, I'm going to add a new server role to this. No, that's not what you do. So we said, okay, we need to build a Windows Server installation that is optimized for that model, which is optimized for the idea that at the beginning, I'm going to sit down with knowledge of what I want, and I'm going to build a Windows Server image that matches that. So this is where we came up with the idea of NanoServer. And some of the things I'm going to highlight is there are some really big mental model shifts around how you think about configuring NanoServer, how you think about deploying NanoServer, and how you think about managing NanoServer. And I would say, honestly, and having worked with a number of customers who have now successfully deployed NanoServer, the biggest surprise for them has been not the day-to-day operations change, because their day-to-day operations hasn't changed that much. What has been surprised is how much they've had to change their processes for how do I deploy an OS and how do I think about things like patching and so on. So we're going to spend a bunch of time digging into that. So some of the core concepts. So we've really tried to move away from the model where you have this general purpose OS, all the roles are there, and you can go and enable or disable them at will. By default, you get NanoServer. It can't do much. I mean, it can host PowerShell. It's a really great PowerShell host. But the decision to install a specific role is installing a separate package. We do have a set of key roles and features. And I was actually chatting to someone, and I'll talk a bit about my experience with this later on. I was chatting to someone just prior to this, and I was saying, and they were asking, hey, where should we be using NanoServer and when should we be thinking about it? And the where you should be thinking about it, I really encourage, right now today with Windows Server 2016, there are two places. The first place is for the roles and features that we've focused on. For each of these roles, so Hyper-V, Scale-Up, File Server, Clustering, IIS, DNS, it's really hard to argue that you shouldn't be using Nano. There's a lot of advantage to using Nano. You should also be looking at Nano for your own internal line of business applications. So as you're looking at your ASP.NET, at your IIS applications and so on, Nano has a lot to bring to the table. Now, in Windows Server 2016, obviously you can't do everything on Nano. So you're still going to have server core, you're still going to have full server. But, these are the places to think about. One thing to highlight before I move off this slide, which is really important, and this was a big goal for us, is even though Nano Server is this new way of deploying and configuring Windows Server, it is 100% compatible with all your existing drivers. So if you have a piece of hardware that is Windows Server certified, has Windows Server drivers, then NanoServer works on it just fine. It also, and another question that I often get asked is, how do I manage this thing? And the short answer is, you manage it just like you do a full installation of Windows Server. You know, and as I said, when you think about how does this change your world, it actually doesn't change your day-to-day operations that much. It does change how you deploy and how you patch. So a couple of things. I mentioned using it for internal applications. One of the big things when we looked at NanoServer is that I discussed with Server Core, we removed the GUI. With NanoServer, we've tried to figure out how to reduce the size further and split it down smaller. This did not come for free. It did come with a cost, and there are a couple of costs from an application developer point of view. The first one is that NanoServer does not have the full Win32 API set. There were a lot of situations where we actually used NanoServer as an opportunity to go through the Windows API and go, for instance, fun quiz, how many low-level APIs are there in Windows that allow you to copy a file? Answer, 7. You don't need 7 APIs to copy a file. 6 of them are there to keep legacy programs continuing to run. And so NanoServer does not support all 7. It only supports the latest one. And there are a number of ones like that. Similarly, we do not support full .NET. We support .NET Core. Now, this does have an impact for programming. And one of the things that I really like, and I would really encourage you to look at if you're a developer, or to get your developers to look at if you're on the IT pro side of things, is we actually have released a Visual Studio profile of what works in NanoServer. And it's really handy. You can get it. You can load it into Visual Studio. And you can just bring up your project, and it'll go through and alert you on both what APIs that you're using that aren't available in NanoServer, and give you the suggested replacement. So it makes it very easy to go through and update your code to get it working on NanoServer. So with all of that kind of background, let's now dig into, what does it look like to deploy and configure this? What's the mechanical process of this look like? So the first thing that surprises a lot of people is that you already have NanoServer. I have a lot of people saying, how do I get this? How do I play with this? It's on the Windows Server 2016 installation media. So if you go to Windows Server 2016, there's a folder NanoServer. It's there. And when you're licensed for Windows Server, you're licensed for NanoServer. It's just like we don't charge you a different licensing fee for core or full. NanoServer is the same. So why doesn't it show up in the installation options when I drop the CD in? And the reason why it doesn't show up is because, as I've been saying, it's a very different process for installing NanoServer. And you'll see that as we go through this presentation. Also on the CD, by the way, are a bunch of packages for a number of the roles. However, that is not all of the roles and packages that we support for NanoServer. So the idea of these packages is we included these on the installation media to make it easy to get up and running. But what our real deployment model is, and this is something that we're continuing to work on, is we allow you to get components from Microsoft Update to build NanoServer images that have all the latest components and all the latest bits. And this is actually done using a set of PowerShell commandlets that we provide. So there are two sets of PowerShell commandlets. There's the ones for generating NanoServer and the images, and there's the ones for package management. We'll dig into package management later. We're going to talk about generating NanoServer images first. So the big mental change here is, as I've been saying, if you think about deploying Windows Server Core, Windows Server Full, you drop in the CD or your Pixie Boot or your whatever, you say, I'm installing Windows Server, you get a generic installation of Windows Server, and then you go through and you do your role configuration and customization. With Nano Server, instead, you go through all the heavy work before you even get started. Now, right at the beginning, you say, okay, I want to build an image which has these roles, that has this configuration, that has these details. And we will generate an image for you, and that image is good to go. It's ready to run. So, when you're creating an image, there are a couple of things that are obviously you have to know. You have to know what your admin password is. Here's a fun one. You have to have the right drivers for your machine. No, we actually went through and did the math on this. You know, one of the great things about Windows Server, and one of the great things about Windows Desktop is that when you install Windows, we put a whole bunch of drivers on there so that you can move it around and it works anyway. So, show of hands, when was the last time you yanked a hard drive out of one server and just plugged it into another server to see if it worked? Yeah, we got a couple of hands, but not something you really do. And so that the cost of the ability to be able to move Windows around anywhere, about 600 meg of drivers that are just sitting on your Windows installation, mostly unused. So we don't do that with Nano Server. With Nano Server, we don't include any drivers by default, which, by the way, means that if you don't set up the drivers yourself, then the sucker's probably not going to boot. So you do have to make sure you've got the drivers, you understand what's needed. You needed to know whether you're deploying to physical hardware or virtual machine, you need to know what edition you're running. Now, there's a bunch of optional things here, but we really encourage you to know as much about your installation as possible. So I have a slide here, which is a bunch of information about what the PowerShell commandlet supports. This is really here for your reference later on. I'm not going to talk through all of these right now because I'm going to show you a bit in a demo later on. So you want to get this slide and have a look at this to understand the options later on. But let's dig into installing drivers for a bit. You know, so as you know, I talked about, we don't install all the drivers by default. What our recommendation is if you really care about having the leanest image possible with the least space used and the least patch concern, then we recommend that you go through, you figure out, okay, what storage, what networking, what hardware, and you load just those drivers. But we understand that not everyone is that OCD. Certainly most of my engineering team is not that OCD. So we do provide a couple of options. The first option that we do is we do have a driver package that we provide that is, it's not 600 meg, it's about 50 meg, and it covers the majority of server hardware that's out there today. So you can install this package, the OEM driver package, and chances are it will get you up and running on a physical computer. Not always. You know, if you're running more specialized hardware, it's not there. For instance, fiber channel drivers aren't included in that package. There's a bunch of specialized network drivers that aren't included in that package. The other option that we provide is if you tell the installation process, hey, I want to run this as a Hyper-V VM, we will install the Hyper-V drivers. Now, a fun thing to catch here, because I have had a number of customers get tripped up on this, is that, yeah, if you go through and you create a Hyper-V, if you create a nano image for physical hardware, and you then try and pull it into a Hyper-V VM, it will not boot. It does not have the drivers. And vice versa. Side note, where I see this tripping people up most often is when they do a dry run using virtual machines, and they figure out their process on virtual machines, and then they go to deploy it to real hardware, and they forget that they need to switch over the driver package. So if you make that mistake, be quick to realize, moving to physical hardware, you need to load different drivers. So, I mentioned that I'd be doing a demo, and I'm going to switch across now. I won't show this slide, which is just a build of what I'm going to show live. So I was talking about we provide a PowerShell module for creating nanoserver images. Let me just quickly show this to you. If I go to, I have on A drive, I have a Windows Server image attached. And if you have a look here, this is the nanoserver folder that I mentioned before. Let me zoom in a little. So this is the nanoserver folder. If you go in here, you can see here are the packages for the roles. And if we go into image generator, here are the PowerShell scripts that allow you to create an image. Now, while I personally love PowerShell, and we spend a lot of time talking about PowerShell, we also acknowledge that PowerShell isn't for everyone at all times. A great example of this is, and I talked about the experiences I've had deploying NanoServer. I've done a lot of deploying NanoServer as a Hyper-V host. I can practically type in the right PowerShell commandlets while wearing a blindfold for creating a Hyper-V host with NanoServer because I do it so often. And then about 2 months ago, I had to help a customer set up a couple of DNS servers on Nano, and I had no idea what I was doing. So I was really glad that we also have developed this graphical tool. So this tool is the NanoServer Image Builder. This is not included on the Windows Server installation media. This is a separate download. So I don't have the URL on me, but if you do a web search for NanoServer Image Builder, it's the first result that's returned. And in order to use the NanoServer Image Builder, you need to have two things. First, you obviously need to have your Windows Server installation media somewhere. Two, you also need to have the Windows ADK installed. The Image Builder uses some components out of the ADK. So I have both of those set up, and I've got the Image Builder. And the first question it asks is, okay, are we creating an image that we're going to boot off of? So you can either create a WIM image or a VHD image to boot off of, or are we actually going to create a bootable USB media? Now, before anyone gets excited and gets the wrong idea, we know we have a bunch of people who actually do want to boot their servers directly off of a USB flash stick. That is not what this does. This creates a USB stick that will install the Nano image onto the server. So if I say create bootable USB media, that is a flash stick that I'm going to take to a server, boot it, it's going to install Nano onto the hard drive on that server. So I'm going to say I want to create a server image. And here we have our usual, you know, Microsoft legal disclaimer. That's still pretty small. I'm going to zoom in. It won't entirely fit on the page. So the first thing it's going to ask is, okay, where's my install media? So I know mine is on the E drive. Then we show the EULA. Fun fact, which I know no one who doesn't work on the engineering team would care about this. We actually do dynamically load the EULA off the install media to display it here so that if our lawyers get frisky and decide to change the EULA and we push out updated media, we don't have to push out an updated image builder. Things that engineers care about. So then there's a very important question here. Are we doing this for a virtual machine or for a physical machine? Now, I will say, I have got a couple of questions about this. I've had people go, hey, what about if I'm using VMware? If you're using VMware, then you want to say you're doing a physical machine, and you need to have the VMware tools unpacked somewhere on your disk so that you can load those drivers in the image. Saying using a virtual machine here will put all the Hyper-V drivers on, which isn't going to help you very much if you're using VMware. So I personally like to use Hyper-V, so I'm going to say a virtual machine image. So output, I'm going to put it on my desktop. Specify size. Always like to bump it up. And then location for log files. So now we're going to go through the basic configuration steps. So here you can select whether you're using data center or standard. And we actually go through and we look at the location you provided for the installation media, and we see what packages are there. And you can go through and select them. So I'm going to set this up as a typical IIS server. So I'm going to say I want IIS. I also want DSC, since I'm going to configure it using DSC. And I want to have the anti-malware components, because this is going to be a publicly facing server, and I want to have some level of protection there. So then we ask for drivers. Now, because I've said it's a virtual machine, we're going to add the Hyper-V drivers by default, and I don't need to add more here. But you know, an interesting thing to highlight, if you think about installing drivers on servers, most often they come with pretty MSI-based installers, and those things don't work on NanoServer. We can't pop a nice little wizard. So if this was a physical server and I had a special driver, what I would actually want to do is I'd want to download the MSI for that, and I would want to unpack the MSI. Most MSIs you can do setup / QN, and it will unpack the files for you. There are various ways to get them. But what you're really looking for is the .sys and .inf files. And once I've got those in a folder, then I could choose to add the drivers, browse for them, and add them here. So then some details. So what's the computer name? So I can put anything in. I'm not planning to boot this. I'm going to use my incredibly secure password of password. And time zone. Now, domain join. There's a couple of options here. So you can, when we looked at domain join for NanoServer, you can actually do domain join in the traditional manner, but domain join in the traditional manner is a very manual interactive process, which is kind of against the philosophy of NanoServer and against what a lot of our customers who want to use NanoServer want to do. So if I don't check domain join, it's going to come up as a workgroup computer, and I could then go in, use PowerShell, join the domain manual. But the two options that we provide for a fully automated instant boot option, the first one here, I'm going to check this and then uncheck this, is I could say, okay, I have gone ahead and I have created an account on my domain controller for this computer ahead of time. It knows it's coming, and I can put the name in here. The other one is we have a technology called offline domain join. An offline domain join is a set of tools that allows you to join a domain before the computer is built. And it will return, when you use the offline domain joins, it returns what's called a blob file that I can provide here to say, okay, when you boot up, provide this blob file to the domain controller and go ahead. Now, I will say, in most customer deployments that I've worked with, the process that we use is the domain blob file. But today, for this, I'm going to say we're not joining the domain, because that's a bit more work. Next, we have network configuration. So a couple of important things to call out. The first one is, as I'm going to be demonstrating later on, the primary way you're going to manage NanoServer if anything goes wrong is with PowerShell remoting. That is going to be your go-to tool. So we try and make it really easy to get PowerShell remoting working on NanoServer. So I would encourage you want to check enable WinRM and remote PowerShell. That is the way you're going to interact with this. Here we also allow you to configure VLANs. So if you have a server deployment where, hey, by default our servers are all on VLAN 4 or something, you can configure that. We also allow you to go through and configure ahead of time whether you're using DHCP or static IP addresses. So going ahead. We then have a bunch of advanced options. So I'm going to step through these. We have servicing packages. This is really neat. So if you're going through and trying to do this as a fully unattended build, you can go ahead and you can download servicing packages, updates from Windows Update, so that the image that you build is up to date the moment that you boot it. And we actually have some great blog posts that step you through this process. We also have the option to embed files or scripts. This is actually something that pretty much every deployment that I've worked with has ended up using heavily. But these scripts usually haven't been that big. Usually what we end up with is we end up with a PowerShell script that's like 6 to 10 lines long. I'm just going through and doing some basic role configuration and customization. So for Hyper-V, setting default paths, setting limits, for DNS, setting basic DNS information and getting things up and running. But here's where you can go through and set, okay, when this image boots, I want it to run the following scripts. This I've seen used less often. We do support emergency management over the serial port. So if you have a data center where you have console access over the serial port, you can enable that with NanoServer. And then there's the option that's only used by my development team, and that is to turn on debugging, because I'm sure most of you don't have debugging enabled on your production servers. So with all that done, go through and confirm it. And I am actually going to create this. Now this takes... I'm actually probably going to get impatient and switch away. I was testing this just the other day on this laptop. This takes about 2.5 minutes. But it's going to go ahead and it's going to create a virtual hard drive with just the components that I selected. So IIS, DSC, and anti-malware. Now the really nice thing is if you have a look down the bottom, it's actually given me exactly the PowerShell commandlet that I need to run to do this again. And in fact, most times that I use this tool, I use it just to get that command line. And once I get that, I pull that out and fine, I'm going to go put that in a build script and get rolling with it. So I am going to get impatient. I will just say it'll finish up. We'll probably come back and have a look at it later. It'll be about 600 meg in size when it's all said and done because it has those three roles on it. So, now's when, yes, I remembered the right number. I had a panic there. I couldn't remember whether the projection machine was 4 or 5. So, I mentioned earlier about getting updated images, getting updated packages for your images. So, on top of the standard packages that we provide in Box, we continue to update packages and we continue to provide new roles. A great example of this, Poster Child is one of the great things you can use NanoServer for, is as a Windows Server container host. But the copy of NanoServer that ships on the Windows Server 2016 Media does not have Docker included in it. But you can use these commands, commandlets, the find NanoServer package, save NanoServer package, and install NanoServer package, to go ahead today and say, okay, let's download the Docker package for Nano, let's bundle it up, let's build it into the image. So these are a set of commandlets that allow you to, as the server roles get updated, as new packages get available, you can acquire them and then roll them into the process. And if you go to msdn.microsoft.com/virtualization and go to the Quick Start Guide for Windows Server Containers, it actually shows you exactly how to use these commandlets in order to achieve that. The next thing, and this is where I said I would trip up. So, as I mentioned earlier, NanoServer does not support MSI. So what does this mean for installing things on NanoServer? It really means two things. One thing in kind of the short term, and then another thing in the long term. In the short term, what it means practically is you're going to spend a lot of time unpacking MSIs and copying files across. That's what we've ended up doing in most customer deployments that I've worked with, is we find what we need, it's in an MSI, we sit down with a full install of Windows Server, We figure out the command line for unpacking it. We copy the files across. It works on Nano server, great. In the long term, we do have a new installer option, the Windows Server App Installer, which we're out working with ISVs and partners to start getting them to provide their applications as WSAs instead of MSIs. So now, what about managing Windows Nano Server? So there's a number of things to understand here. The first thing is, and I have a slide on this later on, and when I get to it, I'm going to say I already talked about that, but I'm going to talk about it now because this message always gets lost in all of the conversation about management of Nano Server. But the thing that I want everyone to be very aware of is any tools that you use for remote management of Server Core or Windows Server just work for Nano Server. People always miss that. So if you're using Server Manager remotely, if you're using Hyper-V Manager remotely, if you're using Failover Cluster Manager remotely, if you're using any of these tools remotely today, then they just continue to work. What does not work is sitting in front of the computer. So that is one of the biggest things, and it's one of the things that this was actually, I'm going to say quote-unquote fun. Hint, it wasn't fun. An interesting activity. One of the things that I've done myself and one of the things that I encourage to any customer who's like, yeah, we're thinking about deploying Nano Server for this server that we have today. Like, we have these set of servers, they're running Windows Server 2012 R2. We're thinking about using Nano Server. What should we be doing to understand what that looks like? The first thing I say is what you should be doing is there's a group policy to disable local login on those servers. Go set it now and figure out how to manage them without ever logging in. Because the reality is, if we're honest, there are a couple of things. One, we all know that's possible. And two, most of us cheat. We all know I can do remote management. We all know these tools work remotely. But most of us, when push comes to shove, we're like, I'm just going to remote desktop it. And so it is really important that you spend the time to actually go and understand how does this stuff work? How do I? And the reality from my experience is that most of the time, when you actually sit down and you get serious about, okay, I'm going to stop logging into my servers and I'm going to start managing them remotely. The first thing is there is always some problem you didn't know about with your remote management tools. Like, there's always some esoteric setting. There's always some like, oh, I need to have that port open or I need to have that policy enabled or I need. But once you get over that, it's actually really nice. So that is, for people who haven't gone to Nano Server and are thinking about what do we need to understand, my first thing is start figuring out how to not log into your servers today. Very heavy reliance on PowerShell and DSC. So anything you can do with PowerShell is great. And remote management continues to work through PowerShell and WMI. Like a lot of our tools do. So here's my slide where we highlight, hey, all your existing remote management tools, Server Manager, Hyper-V Manager, Failover Cluster Manager, Perfmon, Event Viewer, so on, they all continue to work. So if you're doing those remotely today, they just work fine. Now, I will say, most customers that I talk to about how they use Windows Server today. Some of these tools they do use remotely today. Hyper-V Manager, quite often used remotely. Failover Cluster Manager, quite often used remotely. Server Manager, a lot of people don't even know you can install that on Windows 10. You can. And you can use it remotely, and it's actually a great experience. Yay! Person with Server Manager installed on their MacBook. Similarly, though, I know a lot of people who've never actually gone through the process of setting up the more basic tools like Perfmon and Event Viewer and so on to work remotely. All of these tools do, and so you can use them remotely. On top of that, we also have the Server Manager tool, which is our new web-based experience that's hosted in Azure to give you another way to manage these systems remotely. So I'm going to skip over this slide because I believe I have this covered in a demo. Yes, demo slide next. That's what I wanted to see. So I'm going to switch over, and now I'm going to talk a bit about PowerShell. So, and I've left this running. This has completed. Unfortunately, it was successful because I didn't keep an eye on it. It would have been terrible if that had failed. But here's my, just finishing up on my last demo, 664 meg for a virtual machine image with IIS, DSC, anti-malware, ready to go, and all my logs have been dropped here. But I wanted to talk about PowerShell. So as I mentioned much earlier in this session, PowerShell is going to be your go-to, you know, tool for doing anything that falls through the cracks with NanoServer. So getting PowerShell remote and working reliably is really important. So I actually have a couple of virtual machines running here. For this demo, let me just zoom in. For this demo, I'm actually going to be using these two virtual machines, which are actually NanoServer instances that are set up as Hyper-V hosts. And so this one, I'm going to be looking at my replica target. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be using PowerShell Direct, but it's the same experience if I use PowerShell Remoting. So let's bring up my PowerShell prompt. And because I'm a good person, I always write down most of the stuff I'm going to type so that I don't mistype it. So I'm just going to say enter PowerShell session. Here I'm doing VM name, but if I was doing this over the network, it would just be dash computer name. And it's going to come up and ask for credentials. And I'm not going to copy and paste my password. I thought about doing it, but... And I got my password wrong. See? That's what happens. It's really embarrassing because it's password. So I'm now connected to a NanoServer image, which is, by the way, it's one of the things, while I love what we've been doing with the technology, we've made demos terrible. Like 90% of my demos now are just like three PowerShell sessions. And there's a lot of like, trust me, this is really a different system. And I spend a lot of time thinking about like, how can I actually prove that this is a different system? So a really easy way to actually highlight that with this one is if I bring up this PowerShell window, let me make my text larger so you can read it. 20. So this is a Windows 10. It is Windows 10. So if I do a get process, you'll see a million processes running because that's what we're used to with Windows. Whereas if I go over to Nano and do get process, about 15. So a lot minimal. And this is, and I do want to highlight, this is not a blank Nano system. If this was a blank Nano system, there would be even fewer. But this is a Nano system that is running as a Hyper-V host. So you can see I have VM Compute, I have VMMS. It's got everything I need for virtual machine management. It actually also has the Hyper-V commandlets. So I can do get VM. Oh, I don't have any configured. Get VM host. There we go. So we did a lot of work to get most of the PowerShell commandlets running on NanoServer. And if I run get command, you're going to see there's a mountain of commandlets. But disclaimer, we don't have all of the PowerShell commandlets running on NanoServer. And unfortunately, it's kind of that annoying coverage where it's like we have 80% coverage, so I can't really give you a nice definitive list of like, oh, here are the commandlets that aren't there. But if you have a big complicated script, it might not work. So the short answer is like, test your scripts before you run them and just make sure that they do run correctly on NanoServer. But we do have a lot of the functionality. And I've actually, you know, as I said, it's been interesting. I've been working with a number of customers deploying NanoServer. And we've actually had a couple of customers who specifically for Hyper-V were expecting that they were going to have to figure out how to do fairly complicated remote management. And once they got PowerShell remoting up and running, they were actually like, and you know what? With the Hyper-V commandlets and PowerShell, we're good. We don't need anything more. So one thing I do want to highlight before I switch off of this riveting demo of PowerShell, back to the slide. One other thing, and I need to blog this. It is annoyingly complicated, but it is also really impressive when you get it up and running. Beginning of January this year, I actually worked with a customer who was deploying NanoServer on a couple of public-facing servers. And we actually went through and we did all the work to get PowerShell remoting over WinRM using SSL to protect the connection. And that all works on NanoServer as well, which is really powerful, highly secure way to be able to do remote management of a system even when it's exposed publicly. So with that, let's jump back to presentation. So getting some more on management, I mentioned we have Server Management, which is our new management tool that's based in Azure. Works for NanoServer, also works for standalone server. We do have a public preview available. So if you're interested in that, you can actually just do a search on Server Management tool. The team has a blog up on it. This is a little out of date. They've recently added some basic support for Hyper-V as well. So now some more interesting esoteric management stuff. One of the other interesting things that we hit with NanoServer, and this was very specific to, I talked about we have all sorts of different customers. One of our, when we started talking about NanoServer to some of our larger scale customers, we have some hosters where they wanted to have a model where they're like, every time a server reboots, we're going to deploy a new instance of NanoServer to it. That's, we're not going to write to disk, we're going to pixie boot this, we're going to put it in memory, and we're going to run it. Which sounds great in theory, sounds fantastic. One of the big problems that we found when doing that is that it was really hard to detect and understand if any of your servers ever had a problem that was causing it to not boot. Because it would just go into this reboot loop and no errors were being generated and no one ever looked at the console and so on. And so what we actually did was we built up this entire infrastructure called Setup and Boot Event Collection. So I'm not going to go into this in great depth here today. One, because it's quite complicated, and two, because it's only probably interesting to like 10 people in the room. But if you're one of those people, what this actually is it's technology where we let you set up a dedicated Windows server in your environment and say, okay, this is the server that's going to gather all the event information about Windows setup and boot in my environment. And you can then set up NanoServer to say, hey, when you're booting, your event information point is over here at this IP address. And then as NanoServer is booting, it puts all the information in there. And then you have a single place where an administrator in your environment can actually go in and check on the boot and deployment process of NanoServer. So the final thing to talk about from a management point of view is the NanoServer Recovery Console. And I'm going to switch across and I'm going to demo this. This was actually a big kind of controversial argument in the engineering team. And I'm smiling as I say controversial argument because my side won. So I'm happy. So How many people here tried Nano Server and Windows Server Technical Preview 2 when it first came out? Awesome. So when we first started building Nano Server, we were building it heavily for Azure and for a lot of our high-end hosters who do large-scale deployments. And one of the big things that we're focused on was, like, these are going to be headless systems. And so we didn't build any local user experience. And when I say we didn't build any local user experience, I really mean we did not write a single line of code for end user experience, which was great for our customers who, like Azure and like those hosters, never actually looked at the console. But when we released it to the general public in Technical Preview 2, what we discovered was that in not writing a single line of code for the local user experience, if you actually booted it on a VM or on a server with a screen, you know how when you boot Windows, it comes up and it shows those three dots going around? Yeah, well, we didn't write any code to make it ever stop showing those three dots going around. And so in Technical Preview 2, you'd boot Nano Server, and it would just sit there for days. Three dots going around. Now, the reality was that Nano Server had booted in like 3 seconds and was good to go. But we had a whole bunch of users who were sitting there going like, man, these guys said Nano Server boots quickly, but the three dots haven't finished going around. Like, I don't know what it's doing. And we'd be like, have you tried connecting to it over the network? And whenever they did, they're like, oh, it works. So we spent a lot of time talking to people and trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with the console? Because clearly the eternal three dots going around was a bad idea. Another equally bad idea, which was there for a very short period of time, is that, and no exaggeration, Nano Server boots on average hardware in about 2 to 3 seconds, i.e. most often you miss it. So we had about a month where, and thankfully even the engineering team realized this was a terrible thing. We had about a month where when you booted Nano Server, all it did was black out the screen, which meant 9 times out of 10 you had no idea if we'd actually booted or not. You know, because you'd turn on your computer, and if you looked away at the wrong moment, you'd look back and be like, the screen's black. That might mean it's okay, or maybe it failed to get through the BIOS. But we spent a lot of time talking, because on one hand, we very much do not want people to be running interactive applications. We don't want people to be hand-holding Nano Server and interacting heavily with the console. And we want people to be doing remote management. We want this to be, you know, built the way it is deployed. But at the same time, we also acknowledge that the world is not a perfect place, and sometimes things go wrong. And so we built this experience, which we call the Recovery Console. And really, the core purpose of the Recovery Console is when something goes wrong and you can't manage Nano Server remotely, you can use the Recovery Console to fix it. So let's have a quick step through of what this looks like. So I'm going to log in, see if I can type password correctly. Yes. So once again, this is set up as a Hyper-V server. Some really basic things that we have. If you look down the bottom, you'll see I have Control F12 to do a clean shutdown, Control F6 to do a clean restart, so that if I've got a hardware issue going on, I can look at that. We've got the basic information about what's the computer name, how long has it been up and running. I can come in and I can look at networking. And specifically, what I can come in is I can come in and I can do some basic IP address configuration. So I can enable, disable the networking. I can look at the routing table. So if something's gone wrong with network configuration so that I can't access this system anymore, I can come in and I can try and fix that up. Come in here, and here's where I can also do IP address configuration. So it's currently DHCP. I could change it to static, do basic IP address configuration so that if it's not on the network. The next thing we have is, anyone who has done any amount of server support knows that the number one most likely way that you shoot yourself in the foot is that you enable the firewall rule that blocks remote management. I think everyone has had that at some stage. So we have provided a basic experience for allowing you to see what firewall rules are configured and for enabling and disabling firewall. So if I had accidentally blocked Windows remote management, which would be a very bad thing, I can come into the recovery console and I can enable it. We also have an emergency WinRAR, I did something that broke WinRM button. Who here has ever done something that broke WinRM? Yep, it happens. So this is literally just a fix WinRM button. That's all it does. So if I hit enter right now, I'm not going to hit enter, but if I hit enter right now, we just blow away the WinRM settings and lay down the default settings again. Just clean the slate. The final thing we have here is, because this is VMs, a Hyper-V host, we have a couple of things. I can go in and I can see the status on virtual machines and make sure they're okay. Another classic mistake that people make, one of my favorite shooting yourself in the foot ones, is to take the network adapter that you use for remote management of the system, create a Hyper-V VM switch on it, and say, do not give the parent access to that switch. You now have a machine that can't be managed. So once again, as a recovery option, we do allow you to come in and remove a switch. So if you have a virtual machine switch that's stopping networking from working, you can come in and remove it. So really the idea is, this is just the bare minimum experience to let you know that one, the system is up and running and good to go, and two, to allow you to fix remote management if anything's gone wrong. So let's jump back. So, a couple of things to recap. Big thing that I've been talking about is you have to change the way you think about deploying and interacting with the server. You know, so you need to think about ahead of time, what does this look like? And it's actually really powerful once you get there. You know, I mentioned that I've helped a number of customers now deploying this in production. The thing that's actually been most fascinating is when I first talk to people about using NanoServer, and I talk about the fact that you can't log in and you have to do remote management and so on, there are a lot of people, and there are probably a lot of people in this audience, who feel a little uncomfortable with that. You know, because it's like that's not what we're used to. But the fascinating thing is, once you've built a couple of NanoServer images, once you've deployed them, one of the things that you start to realize is you actually don't remotely manage them that much because there isn't that much that can go wrong. You know, so for instance, you deploy a Hyper-V server on NanoServer, because people can't log into it, it's actually really hard to break it. You know, you get it configured, and actually, configuration drift doesn't tend to happen anymore. You know, because the only way you change the configuration is through PowerShell. And so it actually ends up being a lot simpler to manage in the field simply because there's less to break. Similar story with DNS. Similar story with file server. Similar story with all the roles that are supported. Because you go in and you set it up just for one purpose and there are no other tools, the process becomes a lot easier. One other thing that I would really encourage is, and this has been, we've kind of worked through this with a number of the customers that I've worked with, is to move to a world where instead of, you know, deploying a server and then patching it and maintaining it and so on, instead move to a world where your patch cycle is deployment. You know, to highlight, you know, the IIS image that I built before, 600 meg. And what we've actually, what most customers that I've worked with have actually moved to is they've moved to a model that says, you know what? When there is a patch that needs to be deployed, what we're going to do is we're going to build a new image and we're going to push out a new image. Because that way, you know, once again, it helps deal with, we don't care about configuration drift. We don't care about a lot of these traditional problems that we've had. So what has been the results of all of this? So we've been working on this for a while, and we've tracked a number of stats about Nano Server versus Windows Server Core. So drivers loaded, services running, ports open by default, all substantially lower. Resource utilization, lower. The really fun ones are things like this. Setup time. You know, and this is, so setup time is the first time you boot Windows on the hardware. Know how the first time you boot Windows on the hardware, it goes through and it's like, ah, I'm detecting, figuring out, so on. With Windows Server Core, takes about 5 minutes. With Nano Server, about 35 seconds. Disk footprint, once again, huge difference. And VHD size, of course, similar difference. And one of the things I do want to highlight, I've been mentioning, we actually have a large number of customers who are using this in production now. So I'd really encourage, don't hesitate for maturity. And one thing, speaking as a Hyper-V guy, one of the things that I'm really proud of is that we actually run the same version of Hyper-V on Nano Server full desktop. Same binaries. We don't have different binaries. We don't have different, so you get the same functionality. So next, I do want to just touch on some of the specific things around Nano Server and servicing. So I've been talking about, thinking about building images, servicing through images. But one of the big things I do want to be very upfront about is Nano Server is a new direction for us. It is something that we are rapidly innovating on. So one of the decisions that we made with Windows Server 2016 was that we would not be releasing Nano Server under our long-term support model. And what this means is, today, if you get Windows Server 2016 Core, and you deploy that, if you want to deploy that and never, ever, ever, ever touch that again, we'll support you for 10 years. You can use Windows Update, you can so on. We are not making that promise with Nano Server. What we are saying with Nano Server is we're going to be releasing frequent entire updates to Nano Server. And when I say frequent, I mean every 6 to 18 months-ish. Think about that sort of Windows, that sort of window. And we will support the current version of Nano Server and the previous version of Nano Server. And so this is where I talk, and when I talk through customers about how are they deploying and how are they managing, this is where we usually end up with saying, you know what? We're just going to go with a model that says, hey, if we need to make a configuration change, if we need to take a service update, we're going to rebuild an image using the latest version. So I'm just going to step through this. So what this looks like is we've released the first CBB of Nano Server, and our intention is we're going to continue to release updated versions of Nano Server, and we will support up to two previous ones. So I'm going to switch through this. So one of the things I mentioned earlier on, we're working on Nano Server. We do think this is the future of Windows Server. But where we are today, not everything runs on it. So the big thing that I'm challenging people to is I'm saying, look at the things that run on Nano Server and figure out how to get there. And also, as you're building new applications, you should absolutely be targeting NanoServer for your new applications. So, final slide. What's the call to action? You know, as I just mentioned, deploy NanoServer where it makes sense. So a couple of the big ones we're seeing, it is a fantastic Hyper-V host. I really, really push NanoServer heavily for Hyper-V. I mean, it's an awesome Hyper-V host. It's great for guests for the roles that are supported on it. So two of the roles where I've seen people be really successful with NanoServer in a VM, the first one is IIS. The second one is actually DNS. After you set up DNS on a NanoServer, you'll wonder why you ever wasted so much space and resource on a DNS server. It's a really nice setup. The next big area that we talk about NanoServer is for containers. Now, I have a session tomorrow where we're going to be doing an overview of containers. The difference that NanoServer makes to the efficiency of containers is huge. Because of NanoServer, we're able to get Windows Server workloads booted and running in under a second in containers. So that's really powerful. We have some great online resources. We have the deployment guide. We have the NanoServer blog. And the blog is actually, we've been getting a lot of material up there just talking about the operational stuff. You know, like how do you patch it? How do you maintain it? And as different tools are coming out. So I'd really encourage the NanoServer blog. We actually have a Channel 9 series, which goes through a lot of these details. And we also have the Windows Server Voice that's dedicated to NanoServer. So that is my last slide. I then have a couple of things that I'm supposed to show you about competitions and so on, but I'm sure you will know all about that. So we do have a couple of minutes left. I'd like to thank you all for your time, and I'd love to open for questions. So question was, does that work with the full suite of VMM? So a couple of things to be really clear about. For the System Center suite, the two ones that we have working today are VMM and SCOM. For VMM, yes, all VMM functionality works on it. Have I ever been in a situation where I need to restore a NanoServer? Not really. Close. And the not really, most of the deployments that I've worked with, we have ended up with a model where we're just like, okay, we're going to create a single PowerShell script that builds the NanoServer completely automated so that it wouldn't actually be a restore, it's just a new deploy. I have had the misfortune of working with a customer who we got a NanoServer deployment up and running, and 2 days after we got it up and running, they had a major disk failure. took out one of their primary storage arrays, and so I got to be very intimate with all the new storage spaces PowerShell commandlets. So it can all be done. But, once again, the model that I see most people going with is you're going to define a NanoServer image that doesn't contain any data that you're persisting. That's going to be on a separate storage array or so on. You're going to want to build a PowerShell script that repeatedly, reliably builds that server. And then if something happens and you need to change hardware or you need to so on, you're just going to run that script again. Yes. Yeah, so if the question is, can you use Operations Manager with NanoServer? Yes, that's one of the two System Center agents that we have running on NanoServer. And I've been asking people on this side, so I'm going to go over to this side. What other packages have pipeline? So the question was, what other packages do we have in the pipeline? And the answer is, I can't answer that. The reason why I can't answer that is because I'm in the base team, and if I told you what things were happening, I would be signing up other random engineering teams for things they haven't announced or committed to yet. So I don't want to misspeak. We are having a lot of look at all the different roles and seeing what we can do to get them up and running. No, it's a big focus for us to get as many of the roles across as possible, but I can't commit. So the question is, can we deploy NanoServer on the SD cards? And honestly, I can't remember the answer to that. Let me explain the reason why I'm like, I can't remember the answer to that. This is one of those things where, is it technically possible? Absolutely. I can point you to the TechNet documentation that will tell you how to do it. What's our support statement around that? I don't know. That's being argued back and forth, and I don't know where it is right now. To give a little bit of clarity around that, I'll tell you the support statement as I last knew it, but this has also been something that there's been countless meetings about, and I've only been in a quarter of them, and I don't like those meetings, so I don't tend to go to them, so I don't know where it's at. So why do we have this kind of wrestle with this? We have this big concern that we don't want people going out and setting up a bunch of business-critical Windows servers on 2-buck SD cards that they got off the back of a truck that will burn holes in them in like 3 seconds. So the last time I checked the support statement, we basically said, we are okay if our first-tier OEMs want to build systems which have high-quality SD cards in them, and they offer Windows Server on SD as part of that, which is the TechNet documentation that we have has all these disclaimers on it going like, only supported if you're an OEM. So I guess my answer is, If you're wanting to do SD card boot for a lab, for something that's not business critical, just go search TechNet for Windows Server SD boot. You'll find a great article that steps you through how to do it. If you're wanting to do this for a production system, you need to be going to your hardware vendor, whether it's Dell, HP, whatever, and saying, hey, can you provide this as an option? So That is the state of play as I last know it. Maybe not entirely accurate.
I was just wondering why main controllers
wasn't a primary first role. So the question was, why wasn't the main controllers a primary first role? Kind of a two-part answer. The first part answer is, there's a lot of code in Active Directory, and it takes work to get this up and running. The second one is just to kind of give, when we looked at the roles to prioritize, there were basically two things that we looked at. The first thing that we looked at was, from an engineering point of view, how easy is it to get this role up and running on NanoServer? So for instance, DNS was actually really easy. It turns out, just through dumb luck, that they didn't take a lot of dependency on a lot of the things that are no longer in NanoServer. The other thing, though, that we looked at was we looked at how many instances of this role are there out there. And when we take that view, number one is IIS. And then there's file server and Hyper-V. Now, while everyone has Active Directory, they only have two or three Active Directory servers. And so from a actual impact to the security patch, so on, it's not as big impact. Is it something we would like to do one day? Absolutely. But just from a, when we look at, where can we get the biggest bang for the buck, it didn't make it too high on the list simply because you don't have a lot of Active Directory service, even though everyone has Active Directory. So I'm going to take two more questions, and then I'm going to wrap up. So you can't deploy this. I actually believe you can. The way you want to deploy this with SCCM is SCCM has an option for deploying Windows Server using VHD boot. And that's the path you want to follow. So you want to go through the process of deploying a VHD booted Windows Server with SCCM. So last question, and then I'm going to wrap up.
Does Nano Server,
what do you mean by warm reboot?
Reboot the server on the hard drive.
Ah, no. Since this is my last question, let me geek out for a moment and give the slightly more detailed answer for that, because it's a fun answer if you meet. So we actually, during the development of Windows Server 2016, we did develop a feature that allows you to do a warm reboot of Windows Server. And for people who were paying attention, it did ship in Windows Server Technical Preview 1, and then it got mysteriously pulled from the build, never to be seen again. So people might wonder what was going on with that. So this is a piece of technology that we actually built first for Azure, because they really care about uptime. I mean, you might think you care about uptime, but nowhere near as much as the people running Azure. And so one of the things they realized was that a large chunk of the downtime to rebooting a server was going through the BIOS and going through post and so on. And so they asked us on the base team, you know, hey, can you make it so that we can take a kernel patch and we can do a soft reboot and not go through the BIOS? And we built this technology for them, and it worked, and it's lovely, and we use it in Azure every day, and we like it very much. Now, there's this interesting thing about Azure, though. And the interesting thing about Azure is, even though Azure has literally millions of servers worldwide, they are actually only four physical boxes. They've done an amazing job on controlling their hardware. And there are only four hardware specs in the entire of Azure. Now, when we rolled out the soft reboot technology in Windows Server 2016, we discovered that it only works reliably on those four boxes. So we had a bunch of people trying it on a bunch of Dells, HP, random boxes that they've built. And what we found was that, yeah, there's a lot of problems. So would we like to do it generally one day? Yes. But we're having a very long conversation with all of our hardware partners and, you know, to figure out, like, okay, what changes need to be made to drivers, firmware, so on. So probably not going to see general public light of day anytime soon, I'm afraid. You'll have to just watch your memory count up every time you reboot for a little while longer, I'm afraid. So thank you all for your time, and I hope you have a great show.